You know, our next guest on the program from, of course, his writings in the Boston Globe, his work on ESPN. He claims to be retired, but the only guy who might have worked harder after announcing his retirement was Frank Sinatra. Let's say hello to Bob Ryan. Bob, good afternoon.
Yeah, but he officially came back. I'm officially not coming back, but that. But yeah, old Blue Eyes didn't stay retired very long, did he?
Not at all. Now, listen, it's not enough for you to be, from our perspective, the greatest sports writer of the generation. Now you've got to go take on the broadcasting world and grab ownership of that as well. Tell us a little bit about your Boston podcast that debuts Friday.
Well, some people are saying that I was the last man in America that did not have a podcast, so now I've joined the parade. I was sitting around minding my own business, and I truly mean that, and when a gentleman named Bob Snyder came to me about 6 months ago, and he's the man who organized and runs Tony Kornheiser's very successful podcast down in Washington, and it turns out he knew a lot about me, and he thought that I could be a candidate for a podcast. And I honestly, as I told him yesterday after we got done doing the first one, I never believed this would happen. I just did not think it was going to happen. It was kind of like this where the Patriots were down 28-3. I didn't think it was going to happen. But it did happen, and I did my first one yesterday. It'll be posted each Friday at approximately 12 noon and for the next few months, and we'll see how it goes. If the public likes it, then you know, we're off and running. But I I've got a wish list of guests. And the way it was framed to me, Rich, that I love if we can pull it off. And I was able to pull it off, or we were able to pull it off yesterday, but I won't always have as compatible a guest as someone you know for 40 years. When you know someone for 40 years and you've shared experiences, it's going to be pretty easy to have a conversation. What we're trying to do, the goal of this, and I think it's the goal of all podcasts, I would think, it's not to have a formal interview, but to allow the listener, he or she, to feel that he or she is eavesdropping on a conversation between two people talking about sports. And in this case, more often than not, Boston sports, although I don't want it to be exclusively that, obviously, but predominantly that. So that's the deal. And my guest was Bob Lobel, who was, I would submit, is the most prominent television sportscaster in the history of Boston television. He had the biggest notoriety. I think he peaked higher than anyone ever peaked in Boston television. And we go back to when he was working in radio in Manchester, New Hampshire, back in the early 70s. So anyway, and hopefully I get some people that we can have a lot of fun with. And I'm excited about it.
Well, I love the concept, and that's my idea of good radio. I'm not a big fan of the hot takes or anything like that. I like to hear smart people talking, and that's what we try to do in our small little main way here.
Well, of course, and it is that's what makes me the best listening, and so we'll see what happens. If I get a quarter of the wish list fulfilled over the next several months, it'll work out pretty well. And so we need to help that we get some people. You'll appreciate this. The best thing for me logistically is that we have a sponsor who is hosting us. It emanates from a restaurant 5 minutes from my house.
Doesn't get much better.
A place I have patronized for over 45 years since I moved into the town of Hingham, Massachusetts. And it's called Hingham Stars on Hingham Harbor. And they graciously have stepped up to host it and promote it. And you can't ask for more than that.
Well, that sounds wonderful. And available on iTunes starting on Friday at 12 noon.
Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Sound, all that stuff. All the stuff that people who are savvy, and I'm sure most of your listeners are, do with it. It's going to be in all the places where you would expect to find a podcast.
Let's talk a moment, Bob, about your recent journey to Vermont and your experiences there.
Yeah, I got a message about last Friday, I guess, from my friend Frank Sullivan, who is a former Harvard coach who was, for many years now has worked in the office of the America East Conference. And he said, you're kind of game. I'm going up to Burlington Monday. You want to come with me? And I said, unfortunately, I was free. And I said, sure. So nothing like a day trip from Boston, good 4-hour ride to Burlington. But we went up for the game. And, of course, as you know, UNH laid a giant brontosaurus egg. They just did. And Tanner Leisner, who's their all-league player, may have had the worst game not only of the season but of his career. and they just got swamped. The only reason they didn't lose by 38 is that they had a buzzer beater, which was their only successful three of the evening, which tells you about all you need to know about how badly they played. Vermont can play much better than they played. They didn't have to play their A game. Vermont probably played about a B game. Anthony Lamb, though, who was the league's Rookie of the Year, had a tremendous game, and he got them off and running. But they can be better than that, and they probably will have to be better than that to beat Albany on Saturday.
Well, we head into the midst of March Madness, and you wrote recently that, especially if you look at the teams in there this year, that the whole March Madness thing, especially at the top, is what you described as a closed shop.
Yes. It's certain things that you think you know, but you don't know as much as you thought you knew. And when you find out the truth, you go, oh, my God. We all know this, an aristocracy in college sports, right? I mean, in college basketball. We know the aristocracy. I mean, the Dukes, the Carolinas, the Kansas, the Kentuckys, the Indianas, the UCLAs, et cetera, and Louisville, certainly. And but you don't realize the extent to which they have monopolized the conversation. There have been 78 NCAA tournament victories handed out since Oregon won the first one in 1939. 41 of them have won by seven schools. And I mean, and that's less than 3% of the pool. There are 347 Division I schools right now. Now, granted, many of those Division I schools were not even some of them not only weren't playing basketball at that level in 1939, they didn't even exist, some of them. But they are there right now. There's 347 schools. The point of all this is it's damn hard to win, and it's hard to win against the aristocracy. And that's why what Gonzaga is trying to do, as much as they've been in the consciousness for the last two decades, since 1999 when they took UConn to the wire in the Final Eight, and they've been in the tournament every year since then. But winning it all, winning those six games separates the men from the boys. Winning six in a row at that level, it's hard, and you need the backings of a program that starts with the administration, or if it's state U, and most of these schools are state U's, the legislature. And they need the commitment. We want to be good in basketball. We're going to do what it takes. And those resources that some schools have are so far out dwarf those of the minnows at the bottom 200 that they have no chance. But the beauty of the tournament, Rich, it doesn't matter. That's not the point of the tournament. The point of the tournament allegedly is to crown the national champion, and it gets the job done. Yes, every year. But the tournament beauty is that there's different satisfaction levels available for the different tiers of college basketball. So that most people are happy just to get in. And if they win a game, the season's a success.
Right.
And the best weekend is very often the first weekend, followed by the second weekend. And by the time you get to the Final Four, it's nowhere near as much fun as the 2 weeks that have preceded it.
I agree with you completely there. We're talking with Bob Ryan here. On Downtown, a lot of Celtics fans were up in arms when Danny Ainge chose to do nothing at the NBA trade deadline. Should fans have a little more faith in him?
Yeah, I mean, look, Cousins, it turns out they didn't have interest in Cousins. And I can, and I wanted Cousins. I said I'd pick him up at the airport. And, of course, now he gets a $50,000 fine because he can't stop being Cousins. You know, his talent is unquestioned, but his temperament is very dubious. Now, so he was never coming here. The two names that were talked about were Paul George and Jimmy Butler. Well, guess what? They're still where they were. The deal wasn't there. They're not the only team that wanted those two guys. The deal wasn't there for anybody. And Danny Ainge still has the Nets pick, which could be anywhere from 1 to 4 this year, which all your savvy college basketball listeners know is a bountiful year. So, and they still might be able to trade it on the trading deadline. I mean, at the draft run up, who knows? Plus, they have money to go out and get somebody in the off season, and I would bet they're going to go after Gordon Hayward, and that makes sense. And if they do get a great draft pick in Gordon Hayward, I'm happy to wait till next year. They're not going to win this year. You know that. No matter what, they weren't going to win with Butler or George this year. And so what they need to do is win a playoff series just to justify this season, because they have yet to do that in the Stevens era. But so I think people should take a deep breath, enjoy the rest of the season, enjoy watching the little guy, and hope they win a first-round series, and then it's all gravy.
The National Football League continues to be better, perhaps, than anybody else at extending their calendar almost year-round, but you're one of those, and I'm with you, having very little interest in the combine and even being a little underwhelmed by this notion of today being the start of the NFL calendar year.
Well, I give you the combine, I think, is, you know, if you're a high football wacko and you get off in the combine, fine. It doesn't tell you who can play football. I'm sorry, it just does not. And when are people going to learn? It doesn't tell you who can play football. Tell you who can jump vertically and jump high and pump 225 how many times, and the guy who holds the record you never heard of. I forgot his name already. Yeah, years ago, 51 times. Who cares? He can't play. Couldn't play. James Ross ran 4.2. Hooray! Can he play? I don't know. They don't know either. They're going to find out. We'll see if he can play. Anyway, but the free agency thing this year is the most interesting year since it came into being with all this quarterback play. So I'm kind of curious myself about that. I'm curious to see if Romo's, now they're saying he may get traded instead of released. That's interesting. And then there might be a domino effect with a three-way trade involving Denver and the Jets. So, I mean, there's some interest in it. But look, Rich, all this does is remind us that in all our four major team sports, whereas once there was actually such a thing as an off season, there is no such thing. There are only two facets of every sport: baseball, basketball, football, hockey. Two facets of professional, and even in college, that is, you're playing games or you're not playing games. And when you're not playing games, there is as much interest generated as when they are playing games. And in college, you translate that to the seasons and recruiting. And recruiting has taken on a phenomenal life of its own in football and basketball. And people make a living, handicapping 13-year-olds, and that's where we are.
We'll hear a lot of talk over the next several months about the 1967 Red Sox as we celebrate the 50th anniversary this year, and you've written about it. That team didn't just have success that year, but they really changed the sports scene, and the Red Sox in particular, all those 50 summers ago.
It's the entire dividing line in Red Sox history. You go from 1903 to 1966, draw a line. It starts anew in 1967. And they had drawn 650,000 people in 65, and then they got up to about 900 in 66 when they did have a decent second half of the year. But no one was prepared for what happened in 1967 with the new manager, and they were not picked to do anything. And we all know how it exploded into the most glorious summer that we had seen. And years and years, and for me, it was the greatest fan experience of my life that surpassed anything I knew in either prep school or college. And I went to 27 games that year, and it was a great, including the October 1, the final day. It changed everything, and everything that this regime, this John Henry Werner regime, has, all the bountiful riches that they are enjoying, and all the Red Sox Nation stuff, and all the stuff, it all traces back to Dick Williams and Jim Lonborg and Carl Yastrzemski and Rico Petrocelli and Joe Foy and Reggie Smith and all of them, Denny Doyle, all those guys, it all traces back to them. And this is when the dividing line, this is when it all began. Until then, Fenway was not the baseball basilica. It was not this hallowed place. It was like the old sofa at grandma's house, and all Tom Yawkey wanted to do was get the hell out of there, and I got proof of that. He said that in June of 1967. He had a story in the Sporting News. I used to carry this clipping around, and it was, he said, we need to get out. We need a ballpark. I can't live in Fenway Park any longer. And that's where we were in 1967 until that team came along to change everything.
I love people that follow their passion. Few people did it any better than someone you recognized on Twitter the other night, Robert Osborne of TCM, who started as an actor but turned his love of movies into a profession and one that we all benefited from.
Yeah, if you love movies, TCM is a gem, and he was such a soothing presence and such a comforting guy and such a knowledgeable guy and such a pleasant person. I always said my next life I wanted to be Alistair Cook, but I'd settle for Robert Osborne, and I would.
Can't go wrong with either one. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Bob, we wish you much success with the podcast. I can't wait to hear it. And as always, thanks for visiting with us.
You got it, Rich. Take care. Bye-bye.
18 minutes after 5 o'clock. And again, Bob Ryan's Boston podcast, available anywhere you can download great podcasts, iTunes and Google and everywhere else, starting at noon on Friday in episode 1 with Bob Lobel this week.